Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Kingdom Minds. My name is Karis.
And I'm David.
We are going to be talking about some news, first of all. Also, we have finally launched our Patreon, so you can support the show if you feel so inclined at patreon.com/KingdomMindsPod. And we have a snazzy new logo. I'm so excited about the design. I love it.
Yeah, I think it looks great.
Yeah, it was a real team effort. And I could not have done it by myself, so I really appreciate you and my brother as well.
Yeah, it was a real collaboration.
Yeah.
You guys did a good job with the color.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too good at color with that. But.
Because when you were like, oh yeah, I'll add the keychains, I was just expecting that. And then all of a sudden it's like, boom, look at the tower. It's so cool. So yeah, I'm really excited. But yeah, in terms of news, there's a few things. First of all, there's the World Ends With You anime trailer, which dropped like 2 weeks ago now. I can't remember. Have you seen it?
Yeah. I did.
What did you think about it?
I'm definitely interested to watch it just because, you know, Kingdom Hearts. But I feel like it lends a little bit more credence to the rumor that they are making a Disney Plus series. Just the fact that Square Enix is actively involved in making TV shows now.
Yeah.
I think that definitely lends more credence to them potentially doing a Kingdom Hearts TV show as well.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to see how this all kind of develops. I'm really excited that the art style is so faithful to the original game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really pops in just the same way that it kind of always did. I think it would have been fun if they kept the flip phones, but I understand why they didn't do that, because I think animating smartphones is probably easier.
Yeah.
And I just thought, like, the fighting looks really dynamic and exciting and stuff. Overall, I'm really hyped. I have seen a lot of people on Twitter, like, freaking out about it and the Kingdom Hearts Disney Plus show, like you mentioned, and wondering if they'll, like, be in the same universe. I kind of hope they don't do that. I kind of hope they leave them separate and they just let The World Ends With You be its own thing. But I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. But it is exciting. And it just seems to be like Square Enix news hype train month.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah, so then there's also Dark Road, and yeah, I guess we'll jump right into that. So what do you think about it? What's your, like, first impressions?
So I like the gameplay style initially better than Union Cross, although we'll get to this in a minute, but the auto function, but I felt like it was too easy to just kind of put everything on auto. Like, I like more of the active gameplay versus, like, building a deck. You do build a deck more in this one than you do in Union Cross.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Union Cross, there was just so much math involved in that. Like, really having to calculate, like, how much you're boosting yourself, how much your metals are stacking on each other. And it just got really taxing brain power wise. I feel like Dark Road is a little bit more intuitive and a little bit more fun. But then they have the whole auto function, and then they have these ridiculous amount of Heartless that you need to beat, where it's just a lot easier to use the auto function.
Yeah.
Like, the auto function is necessarily only because they created all these quests where you have to defeat a ridiculous number of Heartless.
Yes.
Like, I feel like if they lowered that amount, didn't make an impossible level curve with all the stuff that they're doing, and got rid of the auto function, then it would be a lot more fun. But I feel like it's become the game now that you just play in your sleep.
Yes.
Because you literally just leave it running all night to fill up all those quests. So I feel like it could be a real good game, but I think it needs some more work.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. Like, so far, I do really enjoy it. I've seen really mixed reactions. A lot of people just complaining that it's bare bones. And I'm like, well, of course it is. Like, it's brand new. Like, what did you expect? Right. It's a mobile game. And to be honest, I actually enjoy the grinding mechanics. Like, I think it's really cool that it's just something to have on in the background. So I'm now level 22, so I can pretty much grind Agrabah on level 2.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I can go a pretty long time before dying and stuff, and I accumulate, like, a ton more BP yeah, yeah. in that time.
I think I'm level 23 now as well.
Oh, I might have been level 23. I think I leveled up yesterday. I can't remember. But at the moment, like, I feel like I'll keep up with it as much as I can. But I do refuse to spend real world money on a gacha game.
Oh, yeah. No, don't do that.
So I am grinding for the long haul.
I think now is a good time to grind because there's not a lot of like super difficult quests.
Sure.
So you could grind pretty easily and not spend any jewels, like save up your jewels until they come out with better cards.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
And you can also log into Union Crofts too and get free jewels from there as well.
Yes, so I figured this out. I'm really not that familiar with Union Cross at all. Like, I played it a tiny bit, and I just didn't. Like you were saying about the map, like I just don't understand how it works.
It's so convoluted.
Yeah,
because it started out simple, and then they just added and added and added and added, and then it's like I cannot imagine a new player trying to jump into Union Cross right now. It's ridiculous.
I just think it's pretty much a waste of time. So I have watched some YouTube videos to like catch up on the story before jumping into Dark Road. But apart from that, I'm not going to go into it except to claim those free jewels once a day because may as well, right?
Yeah. And on that note, I think what they're going to do is they're just going to slowly phase out Union Cross probably over the course of maybe a year until the app is just Dark Road. So I think they'll start slow on the updates for Dark Road. And I'm pretty sure it'll probably be proportional to where the more updates they start releasing for Dark Road, the fewer updates they'll be releasing for Union Cross.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, honestly, as well, the other thing, after I realized, I don't know why I didn't realize this, but after I realized that you could go into the settings and turn off the music, and you can listen to podcasts and run Dark Road and just let it grind, this was a game changer. I was so hyped. I was like, yes, I can listen to podcasts, turn off the Agrabah music, and just let it play itself. And honestly, do you know what? I actually think it's been really helpful for me in like the last few weeks to like stop me being on my phone all the time, that I'm like, oh, I need to level up Dark Road, so I'm just gonna leave that open and not touch my phone. So like I really appreciate it for that reason.
Unintentional phone self-control app.
yes. But anyway, yeah, so what do you think of the story so far of Dark Road? I was watching back the cutscenes yesterday, and they've actually packed a lot into it.
So that's what I was thinking. There's actually a lot compared to how much they would normally add with Union Cross. So Union Cross would just be so spread out and so sparse, like so brief. And the stories just didn't really always connect directly to each other until more recently. It was just kind of like, oh, here's a random little story here and here's a random little story there. But I feel like they learned their lesson. So I like the chapter format that they're doing in Dark Road, where you get like a complete like episode every time they're going to do a story update.
Yeah.
So you're not like getting like one or two cutscenes, and then you're just going to wait a few months to get the next one, which is that's really annoying.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the most annoying things about Union Cross is how spread apart the cutscenes are.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely prefer this if, you know, even if it means having to wait longer for the next chapter, to just be able to play a whole chapter, you know, with a kind of beginning, middle, and end to it.
Yeah, I feel like it's way more engaging for someone just jumping straight in. It's like, oh, there's already like a full story to begin with.
And it motivated me to actually play it.
Yeah.
Like, because I want to see what happens next.
Exactly. And I mean, I wonder if they've only done that for the first, they're like, oh, we're just launching this game, so we have to do like a significant amount of story at the beginning. And then I wonder if they'll kind of slow down as they go. I hope they don't.
Yeah, I hope not.
That would be unfortunate. But it was really cool. And it just started out with Xehanort like on Destiny Islands and stuff. And this is like the only place he's ever known. And he's got this dream about other worlds and things. And all of a sudden he's wakes up and he's in Skalad Kylum and he goes through that portal and stuff. It's just like, whoa, what is going on? This is super interesting. I wasn't expecting it to be so engaging. I don't know what I expected, but I think story-wise it is really interesting. And there's a lot of like avenues they could go. Spoilers for Dark Road. But in the last cutscene where there's the 4 years later.
Spoilers.
And he's standing by the graves. I'm like, oh, dang. Let's not get too attached to Bragi and Harmard and Vor and Arndt, I guess.
So, what did you think of that?
Oh, I was upset. I was like, I already really enjoy like the designs of these characters, and you're just gonna be like, 4 years later they die, and that's it. So, but I don't know. I mean, it could be like an end game situation where he goes back and changes things. I don't know. Like, whatever. I mean, we already know that Xehanort time travels a bunch, so you never know. I feel like that's unlikely. I feel most likely they probably will die, and that is sad. But it's also like, this is intriguing. What's gonna happen?
Yeah, so my first thought was, dang, really, that escalated quickly.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting. I feel like this might be the first time Kingdom Hearts has done a flash forward like that. So I definitely wasn't expecting that. But do you think that it's actually them, though? Because we see four graves and we don't see his friends. But I feel like it's something Nomura would do. I feel like this is something also very like Lost inspired, with the flash forwards and like foreshadowing somebody dying. But not exactly knowing who it is, but kind of setting up your expectation to who you think it's going to be. But then at the last minute, like, oh, it's not who you thought it was.
Right.
I feel like that would be interesting, to where maybe at some point we find out that the twist is, oh, it's not, maybe it's not that, maybe it's somebody else we were introduced to that ends up dying.
Yeah, I feel like that is for sure a possibility.
Yeah, I think that would be an interesting twist.
That would be interesting. But I don't know. I mean, maybe Nomura is like, do you know what? I actually need to kill off some characters. Let's go. You know?
He just loves these sad, saccharine endings.
Yeah.
Just cannot have a game with a happy ending.
Nope.
Except Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yeah. Oh, dang. We'll get to that. So I guess we'll see. I mean, who's to say? I mean, I feel like it's going to be the four of them, but maybe it's not. And I'm seeing comments on YouTube videos like, well, Vor has to survive because she's Kyrie's grandmother. I'm like, really? Come on.
Well, but also the, what's his name's sister is missing too. So one of them could be his sister.
Potentially, yeah.
And then there's also the
Baldur
upperclassman that disappeared. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Baldur's sister.
That's a possibility as well. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's like, well, they failed on their mission. They didn't find the upperclassmen. Now they're all dead. So great. I don't know.
Do you think that Yen Sid will end up being one of the upperclassmen?
I have not thought about that. Maybe. Feel like that would be interesting.
That would be pretty cool.
I don't know who the others will be. Did they say there were seven?
I don't remember the number.
Seven wielders. I don't know. I could be wrong about that.
I think so. And speaking of the 4 years later thing, I feel like that's also probably a meta prediction as to how long the game is going to last. Because I'm assuming that's like the flash forward is towards the end of the story. So I'm thinking that the game itself will probably last for 4 years, which is about how long Union Cross lasted.
That's interesting. Yeah. Do you think, okay, this just occurred to me right now. So obviously the game is called Dark Road. It's about Xehanort. We know that in the future he becomes the antagonist of the whole Kingdom Hearts saga so far as we know it. Do you think Xehanort killed those four people?
Huh. I don't know. I mean, it didn't seem that way because Ericus tells him it wasn't your fault. Which tells me that there must be some ambiguity as to what happened to these guys. I do think he was in some way responsible, because telling him it's not your fault implies that he would at least believe, there's at least enough convincing evidence to believe that he was responsible.
Interesting. Well, I guess we'll have to wait 4 years to find out.
Yeah, guess so.
But no, like, I'm planning at the moment to stick with it. For as long as I can. I mean, it could be that Like, if it gets to a stage where you have to spend real money to, like, progress at all, then I don't know. Mm-hmm. Probably not. But as it is right now, I mean, it's pretty fun just to put it on and have it in the background. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of people don't enjoy it, but that's cool. And I get it.
Yeah, I agree. I'll probably play it.
Excellent. So I guess we can move on to our second segment. So we were going to discuss our favorite non-Disney worlds in Kingdom Hearts, or some of them anyway. Yeah, I guess I went first last time. Do you want to go first this time with your list?
Yeah, so we're doing five, right?
I have five.
Yeah, okay, man. So I'm trying to think of remember my order here. But
mine aren't in any particular order.
So I'll just start with my top. So I would say definitely my favorite is Ska at Kai Lung.
Mm.
Just because it's so huge and I just love how much detail they put into it.
Yeah.
Especially in Remind when you get to see more of it. I was just walking around. I felt like I was like a tourist, like on vacation. Like I was just kind of walking around, like looking at all the stuff, like taking pictures. Because I'm like, man, like they put so much detail into it. Like you see like all the posters for like events and stuff. And you see like food carts for like markets and like the flags and the banners and like the apartments. It's just so immersive.
Mm.
It's just so impressive that they just spent so much, put so much work and effort into creating that whole city.
For sure. Yeah, I think it's
and
great.
Just so beautiful. Yeah, I just love Ska at Kai Lung. Hope we can play there again in a future game. Because, you know, I've been debating whether I really have time to be playing every single Kingdom Hearts game. And I'm thinking that, you know, for some games, I might just watch the cutscenes online. But if there's a game that has Ska at Kai Lung in it, I'm probably going to buy it just to be able to play in Ska at Kai Lung again.
Sweet.
And I'm sure there will be, just because they'd probably want to reuse those assets they made.
I feel like yes, absolutely.
So definitely number one, Ska at Kai Lung. Number two, I would say I just have really fond memories of Traverse Town.
Yes.
Because it's the first world that you visit, the first original world. I love the music for it. I love kind of the small town-ish vibe. Not small town, but it fits the archetype of the town that the hero goes to at the beginning of his journey.
Yeah, sure.
It's like the Brie Kingdom Hearts, basically. or the cantina, right?
Yes.
So it's like this first world that you go to where it's just like everything is different. And it's like, you know, what is this place like, you know, lets you know that your whole world is about to change.
Mm.
I feel like it's really kind of the pinnacle of that archetype.
That's a really good description. Like, I hadn't really thought about that as an archetype, but I was trying to think about this yesterday. I'm like, why is it so nostalgic? Like, why do I think about it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do I like it so much?
It feels very nostalgic.
Yes, and I feel like you hit the nail on the head. It's like, because it's the first place you go.
But I feel like even the first time you play it, you feel nostalgic, even though you've never been there before, which I think is really cool. It's almost like this place you feel like you've always known, but also doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
It's a really cool feeling.
It is cool.
Yeah. It's like familiar, but unfamiliar at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a supposed to be like, I guess, a hodgepodge of like different pieces of world stuck together, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm trying to think of what all worlds are. Because I guess there's not as many.
No. So I feel like there'll be some crossover in this list.
Yeah. But I really like Destiny Islands. That is, well, I guess Destiny Islands is the first original world. It also has a nostalgic feel just because, you know, it's a tutorial level in the first game.
Yep.
And I'm actually pretty disappointed that we didn't get to actually play in Destiny Islands in Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been great.
But I mean, I guess in Remind, you can run around in there a little bit in the... what do you call it? The data photo section thing.
Yeah.
But it's not the same.
No, it is sad.
I like the original Hallow Bastion from Kingdom Hearts 1.
Yeah.
I don't remember it too well because it's been a long time since I played it. Yeah, it had kind of a kind of creepy, dark, like this is the final world kind of feel to it.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. I feel especially in like the Heartless design, but also in the architecture and the actual aesthetic of the place, like all the strange, weird like pipes and stuff. It's kind of like a steampunk sort of vibe.
Yeah, yeah. I also like the Kingdom Hearts 2 Hollow Bastion just because of the Thousand Heartless fight.
Oh, dang. All of a sudden, Kingdom Hearts is a hack and slash.
Yeah. But that was pretty fun.
Oh, it's so fun.
Have you seen, what's her name now? I forgot her name. That girl, Kingdom Hearts YouTuber, something Key.
Sarah Key.
Anyway, yes, Sarah Key. She played Kingdom Hearts 2. With a dance pad.
I saw that. I haven't actually watched it. I saw that happened, and I was like, what?
I didn't watch the whole thing. I just kind of skipped through different parts. But yeah, that was a workout.
That's insane.
She was like all exhausted after the Thousand Heartless fight. And then like you see the cutscene of Sora, and he's just like breathing heavily, like leaning against the wall. And she's like, that's me. That's me right now.
Oh, that's awesome. I need to watch that.
But anyway, I think last pick would be the final world in Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yes.
I just think it's really cool, really beautiful. Just kind of running around in this open space. But you know, the part where you have to catch all of your pieces of yourself floating around, that was pretty fun.
I forgot about that. Like, that is a thing. And I saw like an art for it on Twitter. And I was like, oh, yeah, that was something that I did one time. That was fun. I need to replay Kingdom Hearts 3, honestly.
Yeah. Well, they made it so you can replay that section.
Oh, sweet.
When you go back to the final world, you can play that part where you catch all the pieces.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know you could do that.
So yeah, that'll be my list. What about you?
Awesome. Yeah, I feel like our list crossed over quite a lot. But I'll just like expand on some of the things that you said. So like, Destiny Islands would be like my first pick. I feel like you already mentioned this, but it is just a really simple location. But to me, it like represents nostalgia and a feeling of just fun, because it's where Sora, Riku, and Kairi grew up, and they had a fun childhood, and we see glimpses of that in the first game. And there are these Final Fantasy characters that just exist there in this cute place.
Yeah.
And it feels like bliss before everything Sora knows disappears forever and things get sad. And they don't even, like, the Final Fantasy characters, I don't even feel out of place, because it almost seems like somewhere that exists totally on its own and it's entirely intentional. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I enjoy swimming and climbing the trees and the fun platforming during the race to name the raft and all that. I think what makes it really special is that it's so small, but not in a bad way where it's like, oh, this level is so tiny. But
yeah,
I feel like because it just means so much to Sora, Kairi, and Riku. Yeah, and I really enjoy the secret place where they draw on the walls and stuff. I don't know, it's really sweet and meaningful.
Well, speaking of the size, were you kind of frustrated that they modeled the main island and you see the main island of Kingdom Hearts 2, but you never actually get to go there?
Yeah. Yeah, I was.
Yeah, because I was like, when I saw that, I was like, oh, wow. Like, they modeled all that. That looks really cool. But then you never get to go there. You never get to play in it.
Nope. It is disappointing. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like that was a weird choice, but it was probably intentional because, like, the islands that we know is obviously the one where Sora, Kairi, and Riku hung out, and that was, like, their play area, whatever. So I guess the main town is kind of less relevant or whatever, but yeah, no, it's totally disappointing, and I wish we were able to see more of places like that. That would have been fun. Also, I also said Traverse Town. And I feel like it has a really cool aesthetic because it just seems like this super unique place. I just love running around. I don't know. It's designed so well. It's really fun to me that the further you get in Kingdom Hearts 1, you can unlock different places. There's more places mm-hmm. you can check out, like the Merlin's house and the underground cavern entrance place, and just cool locations like that. And
yeah,
I don't know, it was really interesting. I really love the huge doors that you go through between each district, because the whole place has like this like insular feel about it. Like the entire town is enclosed in a little bubble, and I feel like it's the big doors that kind of make it feel that way. Like it's a kind of bunker or something, like a safe haven.
Yeah.
And it's kind of never really explained. Well, I guess it is like a stopgap between worlds where people go if their world has been consumed to the darkness. But it's kind of never really explained like how it came to be or what happened. It just sort of appeared. I don't know.
Yeah. That's another appealing thing about it, is kind of wondering like, where did this world come from?
Yeah.
How many worlds were destroyed before like this world was built up to the way it is now? Was it always this way, or did like people over time like built it?
Yeah, no, it's interesting, and it's cool that it has NPCs. I mean, they don't actually talk, but that's fun. Because as much as I love Skylodge Kylum, it's frustrating that you can't speak to anyone. There's no one there.
Right.
But it is awesome. No, my third pick would be The World That Never Was from Kingdom Hearts 2. It's just so different. Because when you arrive, it's like the city that you see in the deep dive, like promo.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
Yeah.
So it's got this like cyberpunk thing going on. And then Sora, Donald, and Giffy, they make their way to the castle where most of the action happens. And it's just really dark and gray. And it's, I mean, I guess it's kind of similar to Hollow Bastion, but like in a different way. It just got like a different feel to anything else in the games. And I feel like it's really iconic and significant because it's the first time you actually see Kingdom Hearts. And it's also where Sora and Roxas actually meet for the first time. Like, there's all these different things that happen. It's just rich with story, and I just think it's amazingly designed as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that also kind of makes you wonder, like, who built all that stuff? How long has it been there?
Mm-hmm. For sure. And, I don't know, there's so much going on, and I think when Riku Ansem shows up and he helps Kairi and things, and then when Sora realizes that it's Riku for the first time and they reunite, like, that is a beautiful moment. And they realize that Riku's been there all the time and he's been dropping all these clues and stuff and helping him all along. And Kairi, she says that thing about, oh, you guys didn't come back, so I came to find you. And it's just great. There's so many moments that are fun and very, very heartwarming, and it's exciting.
Definitely.
Yeah, I also said Scala. I don't think I enjoy it as much as you. I do really enjoy the aesthetic as well. I mean, the gameplay in the base game when you go there, it's pretty bland. It's just like a couple boss fights and it's a big square. But it's cool in Remind where you actually are able to go around and explore more of it. And I think as well, like you said, in future games, it could be really fun, dynamic location, gameplay-wise, if they're even able to expand even more of it, because it kind of seems to go on indefinitely. It's huge when you see, like, cutscenes of it, and it's like just thousands of big, kind of Aztec-looking towns floating, I guess. It's just huge, and it'd be really cool to see more of it. And also NPCs would be fun. It's like, where did all the people go? I guess Starcrowd will answer that, I assume.
Yeah. I find it so funny how they're trying to find like story explanations for why there are no NPCs in Dark Road, where they're like, oh yeah, actually the other islands are uninhabited. oh, that's convenient. Yeah. No NPCs then, I guess.
Yeah.
Or they'll be like, oh yeah, the worlds are still reforming after the Keyblade Wars, so there's nobody around. That's why there's no people. Okay, sure.
Yeah, I feel sure, like guys.
Whatever you say.
100%. Like, that's the reason the devs just didn't put anyone in these worlds. Like, especially, I mean, people act like Kingdom Hearts 2 is like the ultimate Kingdom Hearts game, and it's amazing. Like, don't get me wrong, like, Final Mix is awesome, but like, the worlds are so barren. There's just no one there. It's really, I don't know. I feel like Kingdom Hearts 3 gets such a bad rap, and it's like, well, I mean, Kingdom Hearts 2 isn't perfect either. But no, mm-hmm. going back to Scala, I just really enjoy the aesthetic. And I mean, apart from the fact that it's always sunny looking, but the design of the buildings, it wouldn't be out of place in a movie like Blade Runner, where there's a bunch of like ancient Greek kind of influences in the architecture and stuff. But then it's also got like this fusion of like ultra modernism and futuristic elements. And that's really cool. And I'm all about that. I love world building. So it's fun to me.
Yeah, I love how all these original worlds have kind of like this really vague, undefinable like time period they're from, where it's like you can't quite pinpoint it. Like, is there modern technology? Is everything ancient? I feel like they find this really cool balance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like that also feeds into the nostalgia thing, is just the kind of weird ambiguity of technology, which I think is really fun. Yeah, my last pick was Radiant Garden. I don't know. I think it's got a lot of charm in its design, because it's kind of like a village outside of the main castle and stuff. I mean, the bigger reason I actually really enjoy it is in Kingdom Hearts 2 Final Mix. I really enjoy the Cavern of Remembrance. I just think it's a really cool area to explore. It's got great music. It's just an interesting feature. And again, Radiant Garden's really rich in terms of its story, and that's where you'll find a lot of Final Fantasy characters, which is always fun. And there's just a lot going on, because it features in more or less every game, apart from Kingdom Hearts 1, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it basically is Hell of Bastion.
Yeah.
Just nicer. Cleaner.
Yes. Where the Hell of Bastion Restoration Committee is doing their thing and restoring the town to its former glory, which is cool. So yeah, I guess that's all we had to say on that. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Nope.
Sweet. All right. I guess we can move on to chatting about some spiritual themes. So we're going to talk today about the letter X and how it's symbolized in Kingdom Hearts all the time. And when I was actually thinking about this, I listed like 6 or 7 different ways that it's used in the games.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm sure you can think of even more.
So just to give a quick background, the letter X, or the Greek letter key, is used a lot in Kingdom Hearts, starting with Birth by Sleep. Used Keyblade, that is the Kai blade, not regular Keyblade, which is really confusing if you don't have the subtitles on. But yeah, and then it, of course, it's used in the title for Kingdom Hearts Key, and then Key back cover, and then Union Cross. Well, do you want to list some of the things that you found as well?
Yeah, so like the first thing that I thought about was like all of the organization members. Well, first of all, Organization 13 in the first place, it's spelt with the X.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's really the first place we see it, is before Birth by Sleep, but it's just not explicitly stated.
No. But yeah, so it's spelt like X, and then the three ones or I's, I guess it would be in Roman numerals. But then all of their names, everyone in the organization, they're all anagrams of their actual names plus an X in there. So like Roxas is Sora plus an X, etc. Axel is Lee plus an X, and all these different things. And it turns out, I did some digging, I was like, well, why is that? And it turns out that Xemnas decided that he was gonna add all these, they're called Recusant sigils, I think is how you pronounce them.
Sigils.
Recusant. Yeah. Awesome. So Xemnas added all these Recusant sigils to everyone in the organization, which is basically the X thing, right? And it like tracks them. So he added them to everybody's names.
Yeah. It's still a little vague on exactly how that works, but okay.
Yeah. I'm like, sure, that's fine. And then another...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, another time it comes up is with Project X.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe that's where Xehanort... Oh, no, but, you know, he used it before that in Birth by Sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Project X, and then also the sigil on Sora's outfit in Dream Drop Distance was used by the organization to track him as well.
Yeah, and then what I realized as well is that Terra, Van, and Aqua, they all have like an X on their clothes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And something else that occurred to me is Verum Rex has an X. I'm like, is that significant? It's got to be, right?
Sure it is.
Got to mean something. What it means, I don't know. But even Yuzora is involved, apparently.
So, yeah, that's a good segue into, well, why are we talking about this as a spiritual theme?
Mm-hmm.
Are we just scraping the bottom of the barrel here?
I mean, maybe. No. Maybe we are reaching a little.
Well, you know, I don't think so, because, you know, there's a lot of things we talk about that maybe sometimes were intentional by the crew, that they're aware that, oh yeah, this is Christian symbolism. I think with things like the stained glass windows and stuff like that, they're definitely aware that they're drawing from Christianity there.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Heartless, they're really drawing from kind of a demonology, things like that.
Yeah.
But, and then there's other things where, you know, it's just kind of coincidence. We're not saying that they're actually implying any biblical themes here. It's probably just a coincidence. But
yeah,
those parallels are still there. But I think that this is one where I think at least Nomura was very much aware of the Christian history behind it, because the Greek letter chi, or chi, the X is the first letter of the word Christ in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
And the first two letters, chi rho or chi rho, became symbol of Christianity
in
early Christendom. So if you've ever seen the symbol of the X, it looks like an X on top of a P with a circle around it. And sometimes it has alpha and omega in between there. That was an early Christian symbol. Sometimes people still use it to symbolize Christianity.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
So, I mean, that's pretty much the biggest use of the letter chi, the Greek letter chi in history. And I think Nomura was probably intentionally drawing from there. And it really goes back, I mean, you've seen it in when you see people say Xmas or abbreviate Christmas as Xmas. Some people think this, that they're just not wanting to say the name Christ, but it's that's not true. It's actually an abbreviation for Christ, because the Greek letter chi is the first letter Christ in Greek.
Yeah, so it's really dumb whenever Christians are like, oh, like Xmas is like a bad thing to say. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Like, I'm literally saying Christmas.
No, it's not. But yeah, so why the significance? Maybe we could talk a little bit about what Christ means, or what Christ is. So, you know, Christ is not Jesus' last name. It actually means, it's the Greek version of the Hebrew word Messiah. So Christ and Messiah are both the same word. It's literally just transliterated from the original language into English, because English, there is no word for Messiah.
No.
So we just took the Hebrew word and transliterated it. We took the Greek word and transliterated it. So Hebrew Messiah, Greek Christ. And what does it mean? So literally, it just means anointed one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to ask, well, okay, now we have to define the definition. What the heck does anointed one mean? So in the Old Testament, the kings of Israel were anointed with oil. So anointing means like you pour oil over somebody's head. And that was kind of a symbol of them being chosen by God or receiving God's spirit. And in some ways, it was kind of a precursor to baptism.
Mm-hmm.
Which, come to think of it, I think we could maybe talk about in a future episode too, the kind of baptism symbolism.
That'd be awesome.
But yeah, so the kings of Israel were anointed, and so they would have been literally messiahs in a sense. They would have been anointed ones. And then later, it becomes used to refer to somebody who God chooses. So for example, King Cyrus was chosen by God to send Israel back to their home country,
mm-hmm.
Back to their homeland. And I believe, I can't remember if it was Isaiah or Jeremiah, one of them refers to King Cyrus as God's anointed one.
I don't know. One of the two.
But then really finally in Daniel, it becomes solidified, I think, into kind of one specific person. So God promised King David that one of his descendants would be king on the throne forever. And that specific son would be one of these anointed ones, but it's that specific son of David that's mentioned in Daniel as God's anointed one. And so from then on, the Messiah, the anointed one, becomes specific to this specific person that God is going to send, who's going to be fulfill all these prophecies about being king of Israel, the son of David, also being the king of the world.
Yeah.
And so I think that that may be why Nomura decided to use the Greek letter chi. I think, you know, having the optional pronunciation of key was kind of a bonus for him.
Yeah.
I think Nomura likes to draw up these really powerful archetypes. And what's a more powerful archetype than Christ himself?
Right.
Christ being, you know, the ultimate, he's the king of the world, he's a savior, and Kingdom Hearts having all the symbolism around kingdoms, around king, even though we've never really explicitly had any mention of any sort of king of Kingdom Hearts, there does seem to be this kind of very slow foreshadowing of Sora maybe being that person, where Sora is symbolized by a crown. And we talked before about a lot of the messianic symbolism behind Sora. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, you should check it out. And then there's the whole Verum Rex thing, the true king or false king. We're not really sure what Verum Rex is, but, you know, Verum Rex, Latin meaning true king. Sora's been wearing that crown around his neck since the first game. And I'm sure at some point, Norma's going to show us where he got that crown from.
Yeah, I would love to know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he will. That's my prediction. I'm calling it now. Every piece of clothing in Kingdom Hearts eventually has some sort of explanation. And something as significant as a crown on Sora's necklace, because we don't see it when Sora's a little kid, but then we do see it in the first game when he's on Destiny Islands. I'm wondering if maybe he got it from Kairi.
Maybe.
Because Kairi wasn't there originally, and then I guess we'll find out how she got to Destiny Islands in the Melody of Memories game.
Sorry, going off on a tangent. I saw a post yesterday of a dude tweeting at Zack Snyder and was like, hey, so in Batman versus Superman, like in Batman's dream sequence or whatever, he's wearing this trench coat. Where did he get it from? And Zack Snyder just replied, I don't know, probably just got it from some dead guy. And I was like, what? So, like, imagine Sora just got the necklace from, like, a dollar store. That would be incredible. That's the most Zack Snyder response ever. The dude doesn't give a crap. But anyway, sorry. Going back to what we were discussing.
Yeah.
No, I think it's so interesting how they have this letter everywhere, and it's just blatant. It's like really in your face, like the world wants us to care about the letter X, about the this word key.
Yeah, and then it's also the key blade which unlocks Kingdom Hearts, so it's like literally like the most important thing.
I was just about to mention that
it's also written on the box that the Master Masters gives Lushu. It says key super on it.
So it's literally everywhere. It's the actual Keyblade, it's the box, it's everything, it's all the organization members, like, it's all linked into this thing, which, if you think about the word, you know, it meaning Messiah, and that meaning the chosen one, or the anointed one, or whatever, I think that really ties into the stuff we have been talking about the last couple of episodes about predestination and free will, and, like, there is a destiny, and there is, like, people that are chosen for a purpose, and that's really interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't have anything else to add. Like, you said everything.
Yeah, you know, ironically, I feel like Kingdom Hearts uses the symbol much more than even Christianity does.
Yeah.
But Christianity is also really the only thing that really uses that symbol. I mean, we use X's a lot in general, like X marks the spot and like that, but I think there's a cool aesthetic to the X, so maybe that's something to it. But those are not really rooted in the symbolism, the Greek for Christ.
I mean, there's also the whole X being used as like a kiss and like a text or whatever. I don't know if that like ties into this at all. Probably not. But I mean, I'm just curious now as to like, where did that come from? Probably nothing. Probably just because back in the day, like, you didn't have enough characters to send text. Like, you had to do it in a certain amount, and otherwise it cost you more money. And do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you had to pay based on the amount of data.
It's another world. Anyway.
Well, I think the XO originated before that because it was used in writing and letters.
But everything means something. And on this podcast, we have to theorize about everything obsessively. and tie it into faith.
Yeah. So I guess maybe just to wrap it up, he really stands for Christ. Christ is literally the key to heaven. Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to Father but by me. And so I just kind of want to reiterate, you know, why we're doing this and why this is cool to tie Christianity hearts is because, you know, who wouldn't want Kingdom Hearts to be real, right? But if the Bible is true, then in a way it is real. Kingdom Hearts is a real place. It's the kingdom of God, and there is a real keyblade, and it is the Word of God. Jesus being called the Word of God. The Word of God is often called the Sword of the Spirit, and He is the actual key to unlocking the gates of heaven for us.
Yep, that's right.
But yeah, you know, there's this idea that in the Bible that, you know, we have full access to heaven now through just faith in Christ. Not of anything that we do, not of any good works that we do, but just as a gift, totally by grace.
For sure. And grace covers every sin, which is exciting. Yes. Hallelujah.
Well, thanks, guys, for listening. Be sure to check us out on Patreon and give us support, even if it's just a dollar or something. That would help immensely. And we'd love to have you on the Discord chat as well and get to meet you and talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, hope you enjoyed the episode. Again, my name is David.
And I'm Karis.
And we will see you guys next time.
Yeah, we will.
All right. Bye, guys.
Take care.